This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are digging deeper into the Lori Daybell trial. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us to discuss this area of it. And I really, I'm always trying to figure out the starting points for people, if you will, how people became who they are today. And the beginning of a relationship, forming a relationship with someone that you end up calling your wife, there's obviously some power there. Or if you call your husband, as Lori and Chad did. My question to you is this enigma of these two people. Chad's this guy setting up tables at conferences, selling books off of it. And the books aren't even really all that well written, and they're very extreme. And here she is falling for this guy. What is the appeal? What is the draw for someone like Lori to be attracted to Chad Daybell? Where does this begin? What was the need that Lori was seeking out to have fulfilled?
Yeah, she really seemed to be attracted to his supposed intellect and his power and his charisma, you know, which I think those of us looking at him from the outside just see a crazy guy.
Yeah.
But clearly she was starstruck and they fed each other's fantasies.
And that's an interesting thing because it seems to be a very intimate relationship, meaning, yes, they're married and such, but a lot of times when you have the cultish type leaders, it's to an even wider group of people. This is not, it's cult-like in a lot of ways, but it's also not your typical cultish type behavior where he's got tons of followers. It's her and him and a couple friends that get together here and there, but he has these books prophesizing about the future based on the visions that he's hearing and the voices that he's hearing. I think the intent probably to try and reach a much larger audience, but was this the beginning of a cult? Was this a cult, even though it was a very small group?
Yeah, and watching the interviews with their friends, how much they completely bought into it at the time is really striking. And I think the more that they find they can get people to buy into these bizarre beliefs, the more that increases their sense of power and the more the beliefs tend to spread. So it does look to me like this was certainly their agenda, that they wanted to have a large following, and they probably could have accumulated more over time if everything hadn't have gone the way it did.
With a case like this and with people like this, once you start to dive in, let's say you are a follower, let's say you are, it's still up in the air who's really kind of running the ship here, Lori or Chad or both of them. But let's just for a moment assume that Lori is the main follower of Chad. Once you dig yourself in so deep into the belief system of, he's prophesizing this must be true. And there's little tidbits here and there that make you think, I'm on the right path. Is there a point where people get into this too deep and it's too shocking and too shameful to admit that you were wrong and back out? Is that why people end up just digging themselves in and not ever coming out in cases like this? Because they're believing it, but at the same point, it'd be extremely painful to realize and to say to the rest of the world and your friends and your family that, sorry, I was believing all this for all this time, but I was completely wrong.
Yeah, I think there's that process. It's sort of that sunk cost fallacy where, well, I've put, you know, so much of my life and my identity into this belief system, it would just devastate me to let go of that. So I think there's that. But you also have the factor that these people who fall for this stuff, what is this almost bizarre need that they have for an identity, for this feeling of, well, I've got this special truth? And some of them are frankly prone to psychosis, you know, to even get that far. I think of meeting someone like that socially, and I would probably want to go the other direction pretty quick. Mm-hmm. But there's a certain kind of person that it's almost like they have radar for it and they become attracted to it even more. So you've got a certain kind of person that falls for it initially. And then, yes, once they've upended their lives for this strange group, it's very hard to get out.
We hear about things like this beyond, obviously, Chad and Lori Daybell. We, in the past, you know, several years, there's been R. Kelly and the women that were in with him. There's been all sorts of situations where women or men get into these sort of cult-like relationships, and then they're there. And then you hear about family members that are, like, pleading, please, I want to get them out of it. Scientology comes to mind. Mm-hmm. And the Leah Remini docuseries, mm-hmm. where it's these families that literally lose their loved ones to these sort of belief systems. Once someone is in there so deep, how does a family member ever, you know, penetrate that? I mean, in many cases, it almost seems completely impossible. Is that person reachable unless they want to be changed or get out of it?
Yeah, I don't think we have data on what percentage of people can be reached. And it's certainly worth trying, but I would say nobody's going to be talking Tom Cruise out of Scientology, you know? So there are people that dedicate their lives to this stuff, and there is no getting them out of it. But I mean, if I had a family member in it, I would certainly be trying.
It seems like obviously many, many do. Some succeed, some do not. Some kind of succeed and get him out for a little bit. Is it like is there a switch that is almost flipping sometimes in people where, you know, for most of their life, who never would have thought they could go down this road with people like this, but at some point they fall into it and either they stay or they may fall out. And then sometimes they fall back in. Like bronchitis. It keeps coming back year to year. Before that, you may never have it, but then you get it forever. I mean, it's a little more it's a very simplistic reference, but that's kind of how I look at this sometimes with that personality type. Like once they're there, they're very prone to it.
Right. And I think that may be the personality quality of suggestibility, that there are people who are just much more suggestible than others. And then there are those of us that tend to be more skeptics and oppositional, you know. And so whenever I feel somebody's trying to sell me on an idea, particularly an unusual idea, I tend to back way off, mm-hmm. you know, but I think there are other people who are attracted to these different ideas and they're just highly suggestible. And so when you put them, you package it in something that's appealing. And certainly when you look at the Daybells, Lori could be a very charming, appealing, charismatic person. And so a lot of it depends on the packaging. I mean, how many people have been pulled into Scientology because of the appearance of, you know, the Hollywood elite that are all involved in it. And it's like all the cool kids are into this, you know? So suggestible people really have to be careful. And if we have suggestible loved ones, I think it's important that we kind of keep an eye on them, because some people, you know, they can be talked out of things and they can retain that essence of ability to think for themselves. But some people just seem to be rather weak in that area.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We have more with Siobhan Scott in just a little bit, psychotherapist and author. You can check out her new book. It's called The Minds of Mass Killers, Understanding and Interpreting the Pathway to Violence. Anyway, we got more with her in just a little bit. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any breaking updates and discussions on the cases we're following for you right here. Get an ad-free experience through Apple Podcasts right now. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.